Blog Talk Radio.
It's 11 a.m. in damp, cold, and gray Los Angeles, California. This is Ray Starman, and you're listening to the Friday early edition of the Ray Starman Show. I'm Ray Starman, your host. I'm also the editor of USDefenseWatch.com, a new website which covers U.S. Defense issues and some political topics 24/7, 365 days a year. Today's subject: hey, old lady, where you going to? The U.S. Army Ranger School. Anybody who's been in the military knows that that is a famous cadence that the Rangers invented, and some other services and some other branches like to chant that when they're running as well, or they used to. Little did anyone ever know when you were running to this a long time ago, or 10 years ago, or whatever, that it would actually become prophetic, that because of President Obama's policies and his hatchet man, Secretary of Defense Ash Carter, and is also his other hatchet men, Secretary of the Army Eric K. Fanning, and Secretary of the Navy Ray Mabus, that these policies, this idea that literally anybody now can serve in the military. That's President Obama's fantasy, I think, is that the United States military are going to be like our national parks, open to everyone. I'm telling you, with the stuff I'm going to be talking about today, that the day is coming when you're going to be seeing 70-year-old women trying out for Ranger School, and they're going to be getting in. It's going to become that absurd. It really is. And if you don't believe me, if you're like, okay, Starman, this has really gone too far, old women in Ranger School. Well, Ranger School, a couple months ago, they graduated a 37-year-old woman. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But that was almost – that's unprecedented, and certainly a bridge too far on that one. Well, let me begin the story when it started. In the end of August 2015 – the Army graduated the first two female graduates of Ranger School ever in its history, Captain Greist and Lieutenant Haver. For anybody who doesn't know, has never been in the military, or is not familiar with Ranger School, Ranger School is probably the toughest training in the Army. I know there's probably some Special Forces people might be listening, or Delta. You know, they're up there too. But Ranger School has always been known as very, very hard. Very hard. 61 days. Used to be four phases. They got rid of the desert phase out there in Utah, and three phases. And basically, most people, if they survive Ranger School, look like living death when they walk out of there. You ever see those old black and white footage of the Holocaust survivors? Well, these Ranger School graduates aren't too much different. I have a very good friend of mine who was a former Ranger School graduate in 1985. He lost 80 pounds there, 80. It's not uncommon for people to be hallucinating when they're on the way out the last week. Everything from heard stories of, guys hallucinating. Jesus handed them a Hershey bar, hallucinating that there's a vending machine with food right outside of their foxhole, all sorts of crazy stuff. And that was a reputation of Ranger School. Anybody who's gone there is listening now is probably laughing at their own stories of horror and suffering that they went through. That it literally was basically what you can do is in the old days, or actually up to the last year when the standards have gone out the window, and I'll talk about that. If you took 10 guys in their early 20s, let's just say 22 years old, the greatest shape of their life, you sent them to Ranger school, the chances of them coming out of there with a Ranger tab are probably a little less than 50% because of the injuries. So when we have the Army graduating two females, it automatically sent up some red flags. And the person who set up the first red flag was none other than Congressman Steve Russell, our new representative, first term, from Oklahoma, Republican. And Congressman Russell is a retired U.S. Army officer, retired as a colonel, did a tour in Iraq, also a Ranger School graduate himself, infantry officer. Steve Russell had doubts. Let's just say that these women could get through Ranger School, because he had actually been there himself, and he actually had succeeded there, won a Ranger tab, and knew the horror, the suffering, and what you actually have to go through to get it. So on September 15th, Steve Russell sends a written request to then Secretary of the Army, John McHugh, saying he'd like to see the Ranger School records for Captain Kristen Greist and First Lieutenant Shay Haver. Nothing happens. This is a congressman from the House Armed Services Committee requesting records from the Secretary of the Army. Excuse me. Finally, about 10 days later, John McHugh gets back to Steve Russell, and he says, we need more time. Now, that was the first alarm bell to go off in Steve Russell's mind. Why did they need more time? Okay. You would think that the chain of command here, Congressman, House Armed Service Committee, requesting documents from the Secretary of the Army. Secretary of the Army picks up the phone, calls the Pentagon. They make a call to Fort Benning, where Ranger School is, and said, we need these records. Okay. Anybody who's been in the military obviously knows that the amount of jumping through hoops of fire to get these records would be incredible. You probably set a world speed record, world dive record through the hoop of fire to get them the records. But nothing happened. No records. Finally, McHugh gets back to Steve Russell. This is now early October. This is probably 3 or 4 weeks later. Early October. And he says, you can't have the records. And Congressman Russell says, well, why can't I have the records? And he says, the records have been destroyed. Destroyed, shredded, burned, trampled upon, lost, the dog ate them. Okay. Now, all military schools usually keep records for a year or two. And Russell knows that something is up. And so he demands to speak, have a meeting with Secretary of the Army, John McHugh. Can't fit you in. Can't schedule you in. I can't get you in. So Steve Russell, then several weeks later, now we're going into late October, is given some kind of half-baked, I'd call it white paper, that is a few pages, that basically says that women can perform just as well at Ranger School as men. Excuse me. I'm getting over a cold here, and this damp weather today isn't helping it. So Russell's like, what in the name of God is this half-baked white paper? What is this thing? It's not even a real record. It's just nothing. So then now we're into late October, probably the beginning of November. And Russell says, I want the green cards for these two. And he also requested, I believe, the green cards for Major Jaster, 37-year-old woman, Anybody who's been in the Army knows that the idea of a 37-year-old man making it through Ranger School is almost near impossible, much less a 37-year-old woman and mother too, who's now a some kind of poster child for the feminists of America. They can do it. They can be Rangers. Russell says, I want the green card. The green card has been in existence since 1952 when Ranger School opened its doors. Anybody who has been to Ranger School since 1952 has a green card. It's basically your college transcript from Ranger School. It has everything, your patrols, your peer evaluations, your land navigation scores, your PT scores, et cetera, et cetera. Guess what happened? You can't have the green cards either. Can't have the green cards. So right now, and I still have to check back with the congressman's office, right now, Steve Russell has gotten nothing. The Army, from Secretary McHugh down, and I guess it's now Eric Fanning down, to was Martin Dempsey, retired, all the way down to Major General Scott Miller, the commander of Fort Benning, has participated in basically blowing off a congressman and the House Armed Services Committee. And I hope that they're trying to subpoena these records. The last I heard that they were trying to do something like that. It's just outrageous, and you don't have to be Columbo or Sherlock Holmes to put two and two together and realize there's some kind of cover-up going on here. The Army does not want Congressman Russell to see these records, you know. And then they said, well, it's because of privacy. Privacy. Okay, we're not talking about releasing this information to the New York Times. It's a congressman in the House Armed Services Committee and in a closed room, guys with top secret clearances looking at somebody's land navigation score. And we're going to go into that. I think I know the reason why they won't release these records. And we're going to take a quick break here, and I'll be right back on the Ray Starman Show, which is brought to you by Steve Barton's News Alert, the total link site for the news and information junkie. Libertarianism, property rights, government corruption, the Chicago mob, struggle against socialism, and Bernie Sanders. The New York mob, higher education ripoffs, housing crash, gun control monopolists, the Ron Paul revolution. Check out Steve Barton's News Alert. That's analert.blogspot.com, or just Google or Bing or Yahoo or whatever, Steve Barton's News Alert. We're back on the Ray Starman Show talking about the Ranger School records fiasco and the feminization of Ranger School, the feminization of the military, and the complete and utter disregard and out-the-window disposal of all standards that were once at Ranger School. So Russell has nothing. The House Armed Services Committee has absolutely nothing. It's a cover-up, and it's a cover-up that the Army is participating in to basically placate a political agenda coming from the White House, that women will be in the combat arms and special operation forces by hook or crook. If the Army has nothing to hide, why aren't they turning over these records? They could have had these records to Russell on September 16th, or maybe the late afternoon of September 15th. That's like saying, hey, Bob, you got your college transcript from Harvard? Yeah, hold on. It's in my file cabinet. Here it is. Kind of like that birth certificate thing with President Obama. But we won't get into that one today. Okay, so you have, obviously, I believe, a cover-up to satisfy a political agenda. And all indications are that Ash Carter made his decision at the beginning of December to authorize women into combat because what he saw at Ranger School. Hey, these women are making it through Ranger School. Look at that, a 37-year-old mother made it. Sir, usually 37-year-old men can't even make it through the first couple weeks of Rangers. Nevertheless, let's do it. Here's my stamp. Boom, women are going to be now in combat arms and special operations. Sir, maybe we need to take a look at that a little bit farther. No. President Obama wants this, and so does Valerie Jarrett. Of course, they don't know anything about the military, but has that ever stopped anyone before from just trying to screw up the U.S. military? Okay, let's move on further now and talk about some of these standards that have been thrown out the window and the lies from the Army. and the lies from the army. The army has said all along that women were not given any special training for this. Yet you found out that they're actually giving some special training for this. There is pre training at Fort Carson, Colorado, which was conducted in the fall, late autumn of 2014 into 2015. There basically was about 90 days of doing nothing but the living, breathing, and learning everything you can about Ranger School. And at this pre-Ranger training at Fort Carson, Lieutenant Shay Haver, who was the one of the first two graduates of Ranger School, Lieutenant Haver didn't pass land navigation there. And yet they sent her to the RTAC, which is the Ranger Training Assessment Course, which is basically 16 days at Fort Benning. You have to make it through this before they even let you crawl through the gates of Fort Benning to start Ranger School. Haver fails land navigation at Fort Carson. Everything I've been told, she failed land navigation at Fort Benning RTAC. And she made it through Ranger School. So you put two and two together there, okay? Unless she had some kind of miracle and was able to all of a sudden grasp land navigation, she probably failed it at Ranger School too. That might be one of the reasons they don't want to show us her records, because it shows probably clearly that she couldn't pass land navigation. A U.S. Army Ranger that doesn't know how to use a map and a compass is like a chef that doesn't know how to use salt and pepper. You know, that's basically, it's a fiasco in the making. It's a fiasco in the making. And I've got a caller right now, and I'm going to take this call right now before we continue talking about this. See if I can get the caller. You're live on the Ray Starman Show. You have anybody there? You're live on the Ray Starman Show. Are you there? Okay, looks like the caller dropped out. So, Lieutenant Haver obviously can't do land navigation, but they pass her at Ranger School. They pass her at Ranger School. And what was even more interesting is that this group that they put through at Fort Carson, which was about 50 women, none of them made it through land navigation, except for a couple, which is really interesting. Land navigation, I mean, unless it's some kind of Delta Force orienteering course, it's just more brains type thing, which probably speaks volumes about the state of the military right now. See if I can take this caller again. You're live on the Ray Starman Show. Go ahead.
Yeah, I went through Ranger School back in 1969 before the establishment of any Ranger regiments.
Yes, sir.
And at the time, they were, Ranger School was, what attracted me to it was, I saw a sign, a poster, and there was an infantry lieutenant on one knee with M14 rifles going straight up in the air, and it said, "Ranger makes a good soldier better." And the idea behind Ranger School at that time, as I remember, was they just wanted you to have the training, send you back to you. If you were in a combat arms organization, you could apply for Ranger School, go to the assessment, get admitted, take the training, go back to your unit with that training. They didn't have regular Ranger battalions back then, but the training was just about as grueling as it is now. It's probably a bit tougher than when I went through, but it was pretty grueling then. I can't see too many women passing under any circumstances. More than just that, the idea of Ranger training being grueling and stuff, we all know it is. I mean, the worst thing about it, you don't get sleep. No sleep. I mean, like, you're sleepwalking through most of the course.
Exactly. If I could just, if you could just talk for a second, the sleep deprivation, which I failed to mention, and if you could mention the food deprivation as well.
Oh, yeah, you definitely lose weight. And I'm like, I was lean and fit when I went in. I've been through jump school and the infantry school at Fort Polk and Armor Non-Commissioned Officer Candidate School and all this stuff. And I was pretty fit. I'd lost 10, 15, 18 pounds by the time I got out. I didn't have any fat to lose. I was, really, it was Well, it was in many respects more grueling than a combat tour I went through in Vietnam. In some respects, it really was. But what bothers me most about it, I think we're losing the institutional memory of having faced enemies that are capable of feeding us on a battlefield. Now, I'm a Vietnam vet.
Exactly.
I fought the North Vietnamese. They were tough. They were formidable. They were courageous. They would give you a hard fight every single time. They couldn't defeat us on a battlefield. They never did. The last time we had an enemy like that, that could actually do that, was in the summer of 1950 on the Korean Peninsula. I mean, I could talk to you about Task Force Smith, the first battles of Tejon and Seoul, the Pusan Perimeter Ambush, the 2nd Infantry Division at Kuna Ri, the withdrawal from Chosin. I mean, that was an enemy that actually came close to defeating on the battlefield. Now, if you were to say things to these present-day people who are running the Army, like Kasserine Pass or Hurricane Force or Pedo River or the strategic bombing campaign or the first naval battle of Savo Island or the Rangers at Cisterna in Italy, they'd look at you with a blank stare. I really am frightened of an Army that can play around like this like they're not serious.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you. In fact, my old unit, 7th Cavalry, took a beating in Korea and Vietnam. But I think one of the bad things to come out of Desert Storm, which was my war, is that all of a sudden the public got the idea that war is a video game. Everything is high tech, and it's not. And
yeah.
I think all this feminization and these policies, it hurts the whole force, the whole U.S. military as a whole. Look what happened with this Iranian situation. You know, what a disgrace, these guys with their hands up on the boat surrendering to the Iranians.
What happened to the code of conduct?
Exactly. You know, I don't even know.
I will not surrender my I remember I used to begin with when I was taught the code of conduct, it began with, I am an American fighting man. I guess that's out the window now. But,
exactly. I think they changed.
Oh, they did. I'm an American now. But the thing of it is that, you know, there's still some essentials that have not changed. I will not surrender my men while they have the means to resist, and I will not give any statements that could give aid to the people who are holding me captive. You don't have to be in a shooting war to be bound by the code of conduct.
Hey, sir, let me before I let you go here, let me ask you a question. What do you think the chances are that a 37-year-old woman made it through Ranger school, honestly?
I just don't believe it. I don't believe it. I'd have to see a green card to be certain of that. And when I got out of active duty in the Army, I spent another 22 years in the National Guard. I was in a military police battalion, which is actually a light infantry battalion configured for rear area security. That's what the TONE actually was. It was a 1977 hotel TONEMP company. We're really light infantry, and we were supposed to take on Russian Spetsnaz units when they, you know, came into rear areas to take out rear area operations. So that's what often when they had us doing exercise, we'd go up against Army Special Forces because they figured it would be the closest thing to it when they put us on active duty scenarios. And we were integrating women then. It was disastrous. I mean, disastrous.
Well,
I've never seen
the
Army
making.
Willfully turn its eyes away from the facts on the ground to push through an agenda no matter what those of us who are on the ground. Because, see, you get these women couldn't even clear a stoppage on a 50 caliber machine gun sometimes. I mean, a routine stoppage. I'm not talking about a ruptured cartridge case or something. I'm talking about a routine stoppage. You just got to pull the charging handle back and get another round back. And they couldn't do it.
I just there's so many unanswered questions. And, you know, one thing people don't even talk about is the hygiene. You know, just from my own experiences, which was my war, Gulf War I, I didn't take a shower for 50 days. So how are females going to handle something like that? 50 days, 5-0. It was. Thank God it was cold out.
Let's not even talk about putting on a ruck and hauling a load any distance. It just wasn't happening. But this exactly. Before I go, can I give you one little story that indicates how insane this is? Okay. On 20 November 1943, during a horrific fighting on Basio Atoll in Tarawa, two Japanese tanks mounted a counterattack against the fragile-ass Marine toehold on Red Beach 3. Now, these Marines were huddled there, and their comrades were getting slaughtered in the lagoon at Basio. All right? And there's a 7-foot seawall. And they got to get these 912-pound or so M3 37-millimeter anti-tank guns over the seawall, 7 feet high. and it's vertical up the slope. And they got to get these anti-tank guns up because the toehold is there for the taking. And they're trying to figure out how to get them up. So the battery commander comes over to these Marines, the five-man gun crew, tell them, lift them over. And they said, yes, sir, and did just that. And I remember, they're in shifting sand, uneven ground. You know, the sand is relatively loose. It's 7 foot high to the seawall. They got to pick up these almost 1,000-pound anti-tank guns to get them in position to knock out these Japanese. And that's just what they did.
And they're getting shot
at. Then after that, they took out a couple of bunkers that had dual-purpose guns in them, knocking out the landing craft coming in. And then they used canister to break up a counterattack by 300 Japanese infantry. Had those guns not been in position, no telling what would have happened on Red Beach 3. Now, look, if people are going to tell me upper body strength doesn't matter anymore, or an average woman's only got 60% of what the average man has, and even after training, both of them comparably, she's still only got 60% of what you're getting from the man.
Look, the problem with the military from all the way down, and you can see it, is that they're not dealing with reality. The Army has lost the idea what's the spirit of the bayonet. You go back to, and I only have about 3.5 minutes here. We go back to some historic Ranger missions, Merrill's Marauders in Burma, 1,000-mile forced march through jungle terrain to come around the flank of the Japanese and hit them. 1,000-mile force march. I don't see a lot of women, sorry to say, being able to handle that.
And women,
mission.
They were debilitated. They were had every manner of disease, scrub typhus, dysentery, cholera, you name it. They were so weak by the time they got. Now, just think, these are strong, fit men when they started. By the end of it, they were utterly debilitated, weakened. And but they wouldn't allow them relief. They kept giving them mission after mission after mission. And they had to go do it in their debilitated condition. Now, if you're strong and fit when you start, you're a wreck by the end of it. And if you start off weaker, how are you going to be when you finish?
That's the thing. And it's a political agenda. And, sir, thank you for your call. Well, hopefully you call in again on the race storm.
It's an important topic. Keep bringing it to people's attention. They've got to know. This is going to cost lives on the battlefield and in the sense of the country's national security. It will actually harm the country's national security agenda. It's insane.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it better. And thanks for your call. And the caller, Vietnam veteran, former Ranger, I couldn't have said it better. This is a national security issue. That's what it is. It isn't just the Ray Starman show, just going off about these issues. This is serious stuff. Now, it's gotten to where it's the red alert level. And when you think of historic Ranger missions, maybe in a more modern perspective, go rent the movie Black Hawk Down. You want to know what the U.S. Army Rangers do, what kind of stuff they get into? If you haven't seen the movie, go watch Black Hawk Down. Or if you're in doubt, you're like, maybe this guy Starman, maybe the caller just now, maybe they don't know what they're talking about. Well, go watch Black Hawk Down. You know, or go watch Saving Private Ryan. You know, Tom Hanks, as you know, they landed on Omaha Beach, 5th Ranger Battalion. And the 2nd Rangers were there, too. And then the Rangers at Pointe du Hoc. This is serious stuff. Well, thank you for joining me on the Ray Starman Show, this earlier edition today at 11 a.m. from cold, damp, and cloudy Los Angeles. We'll see you tomorrow on the Ray Starman Show.